A lake is the landscape's most beautiful and expressive feature. It is Earth's eye, looking into which the beholder measures the depths of his own nature. The fluviatile trees next to the shore are the slender eyelashes which fringe it, and the wooded hills and cliffs around are its overhanging brows. Henry David Thoreau. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate all the recent support. May has remained extremely, downloaded month, the most downloaded month ever, by far. I'm stunned by it. I thought after, the show before last week's, saw a tremendous number of downloads. I was like, wow, I guess people must have found it. And this week, those numbers have continued and even grown from that. So all the new listeners, welcome. I hope you continue to enjoy and have gone back and listened to the previous episodes. And I guess you are, of course, telling other people about it. And, to my continuing and regular listeners, thank you all for, your steady support as well. It means a lot. I'm sure that's part of the reason that the show is seeing so much growth. So thank you all so, so much. Hopefully the audio is going to turn out okay for this episode. I've had a little bit of an issue with the microphone. It's my normal one. But where I'm recording here for my travels for the holidays, kind of seems like it's a little low, and I'm hoping that the that it's going to turn out okay in terms of sound mixing. So probably a shorter episode this week just to make sure that things aren't too bad. But we are going to continue talking about the Nilo-Saharan people, or at least the theoretical Nilo-Saharan speakers, focusing mainly this week on those living around the shores of Lake Chad, which we talked a little bit about the rivers feeding into that last week, and this week we're going to continue on that focus. And then, of course, next week we'll continue on with some other theoretical Nilo-Saharan language speakers. So let's go ahead and start talking about Lake Chad itself. The name Chad comes from the Canary languages. Linguists disagree if there's enough deviation between the speakers in the various locations that the Canary language is found to classify it as a single language of several dialects, or if there are a handful of small languages belonging to what is a Canary family, or if it's a combination of the two. Maybe there's one or two languages, and then the rest of them are just dialects of those one or two. Whatever the case, the term all of these use for lake is Sadi or Sade, and this got corrupted into French and English as Chad. The French don't pronounce the T in that, so in English we just heard the French pronunciation Chad. Of course, Lake Chad is by far the biggest lake in the region, and indeed one of the biggest lakes on the continent. And at times, it's one of the biggest lakes in the world. I say at times because its size has shifted quite regularly, with a handful of periods within the last 40,000 years or so, with the lake being closer, in some cases, to an inland sea in size. It is a fresh water body, though. In terms of size, I couldn't get an exact size of the lake for this season. At its maximum during the Imian period, it was around 390,000 square miles, which is like 1,010,000 square kilometers. Now, around 5,000 BC, it had shrunk due to the desertification of the Sahara, but it would still have taken up a good chunk of Ireland and the UK could those land masses have been in the middle of the lake without, touching shore. Now, it does and will continue to shrink And we will talk about the reasons for this in later episodes, but even in its diminished state, the lake still plays a very similar role today as it did in the past, especially to the people living along its shores and river systems during this season. It creates an area that was not just vital for providing fresh water for men, plants, animals, but itself provided, you know, another source of food for a human population that was steadily growing due to an influx of migrants caused by the desertification of the Sahara to the north. And fishing will become an important part of life in the region, and it remains so even to today. Excuse me. Dog is nearby and was causing a little bit of a kerfuffle, so I had to pause recording for a moment. So yes, fishing will again become an important part of life in the region if it wasn't already, and essentially it's going to become more important as time goes on, even after the addition of pastoralism and agriculture to the region. And even after those kind of take over, fishing is still an important supplement to the diet of the peoples living in and around the Lake Chad area. Now, as I said, there will be, right around the midpoint of this season, right around 5000 BC, BCE, depending on your choice. And again, I forgot to reiterate that at the start of this season. We are covering between 6 and 4000 BC in the region. So right around 5000, a number of groups start living in small, semi-permanent village settlements, or maybe small towns, depending on how, depending on the time of year, you know, the size is going to grow. Villages will conglomerate and then disband, you know, once, you know, certain population limits are reached for the region, and then some of those people will break off and form their own smaller villages, and that's going to continue in this region for quite some time. Now, part of this is going to be helped by an influx of pastoralists and their herds coming in from the northeast. And that's obviously going to contribute, of course, to the formation and continued development and expansion of village life in this region. Now, agriculture is going to be delayed entering this part of Africa. The Sahel isn't suited for large-scale agriculture, and the quickest way to reach Lake Chad and its water systems is to cross the Sahel. Now, the people making this journey are pastoralists, and they would need to keep their herds moving and not wait around for, you know, a meager harvest of some grass or grain. Because they, again, they can't spend their time both tending their herds and really focusing on watching out for the plants as they're growing. So they probably stuck to primarily managing the herds as opposed to worrying about plants. Some groups will not make this decision. They'll focus on the agriculture. But that's stuff we'll get into later. Now, some Nilo-Saharan peoples, as I said, are practicing agriculture, but these groups are in the river valleys to the east and south that we talked about last time, the Blue and White Nile. And, of course, in the Lake Chad region, there probably wasn't a need to farm. The land and freshwater marshes, lakes, and rivers, along with the herds moving through the region, would provide more than enough food for the population. And of course, you still have people, you know, gathering wild grasses, grains, plants, tubers, fruits, things like that. Now, this will change sometime near the start of next season, though, when kind of that early stage of proto-agriculture really develops. Now, toward the end of this season, the peoples in this region will establish small, rudimentary trade links between themselves and peoples living along the Niger to the west and the Horn of Africa and the Nile Valley to the east. And things like animals, stone, rare stone, things like obsidian, pottery, etc., will pass along this kind of Sahel corridor. And this is the only known direct link between East and West Sub-Saharan Africa until around the 200s or so BCE. It is only going to start seeing more traffic, volume, and variety of goods as time goes on. And we will, and it will continue to be the primary connection between the two regions, for quite some time. And that's all stuff that's going to continue as we go forward. Now, another change that's happening is related to language evolution and growth. You have a couple of different regions where peoples are beginning to practice different types of living. You, of course, have your agriculturalists, you have your pastoralists, you have your traditional hunter-gatherers, and you have the interactions between all these people, and you have people that are practicing some variations of all of these different modes of living. Again, we're not sure how closely related all these languages are. That's debated. But you're probably dealing with at least three, possibly four branches that are existing at this time period. Could be less. It could be two or three. But eventually it will grow into four. This region that we're referring to today is part of the Sahel region. That's going to end up forming, itself will have probably between four and five kind of families that are part of the Sahel group. Kanuri, which I mentioned at the start of the episode, that is kind of considered part of the Saharan branch of the Nilo-Saharan group. Eventually, they will occupy kind of the northern bank of the Niger River, and that's where you'll see a lot of permanent interactions between those people and the Niger-Congo peoples. Now, due to the wetter, marshier environment, unfortunately, we don't have too much to go on in terms of firm material culture. There's not at least strict names associated with this time frame for any of these peoples, though eventually they do form some cultures, though this again will not happen until a little bit later. And there is a lot of overlap between Nilo-Saharan speakers, or theoretical Nilo-Saharan speakers, and the Niger Congo languages. There is probably some level of intermarriage at this point, and there was probably some level of intermarriage in the past. I know the Roundhead culture I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, they had been living around Lake Chad at earlier points, but I think around 7,000 BC, so about 1,000 years before this season started, they had left the Lake Chad region permanently. Why they never moved back once the desertification started, it's hard to say. Maybe, you know, they moved so far to the west, there just wasn't a way to get through to Lake Chad, and they just moved south to the Niger River or the Senegal River, and they just that was just an easier journey, perhaps. And again, this kind of plays into the idea of there being obviously no borders because there are no centralized states as we understand them. So much like the Nahua Saharan speakers influencing and being influenced by people further north in the Nile Valley, you also have Nahua Saharan speakers being influenced and influencing people to the west and to the east and eventually the south as well. And this is something that we're going to have to struggle with going forward in terms of who did what and who spread what where. Now, it's probably not important in the grand scheme of things about who gets credit for, you know, certain innovations or lifestyles or whatever else you want to talk about. But it is something that is kind of debated in various academic and in some cases I hesitate to say nationalistic aspects, but in some cases it is a point of national or ethnic pride in certain situations, though again, that kind of depends on the region and of course the peoples involved. Now there is another language family spoken in this region around Lake Chad. These are known as the Chadic languages. They are part of the Afro-Asiatic family. This would have been an offshoot from the Afro-Asiatic languages spoken in the Horn of Africa, modern-day Ethiopia, Etruria, that region. Who got around Lake Chad first is hard to say. It's possible that they were around the same time period. It's possible that the Chadic languages get to the region a little bit earlier. It's possible they get there a little bit later. That is another thing that is debated. And Chadic is very interesting because despite it probably being a newer branch of Afro-Asiatic, it is still very old. It's very possible that these two languages got to the region around the same time as well. They've definitely been interacting for a long time because there are words in Chadic that are loan words from the Nilo Saharan languages around that same area. So, again, one of those issues we run into where there's just not clear borders and delineation. And there are cases where some of these groups may ethnically be closer related to other groups that speak the same language primarily, but who may ethnically be closer to the opposite group. So there may be Afro-Asiatic Chadic speakers who are actually more closely related to Nilo Saharan people, and there may be Nilo Saharan speakers who are more closely related to Chadic speakers. And there's going to be issues where, you know, one group is more prominent than the other. They will be founding rival states or cities or tribal groups where, you know, they compete with each other for control of the trade routes, or, you know, just control of land. One of the big languages that is Chadic is Hausa. That is one of the big trade languages for a good number of years, for a very long period of time for the region. So that's something we're going to have to keep our eye on as we continue to explore. And the Chadic languages, I don't think they go quite as far west as the Nilo Saharan languages, but they go almost the same in terms of length. So this kind of central Sahelian region, Eastern Africa, there's a lot of overlap and competition between Nyla Saharan, Afroasiatic speakers, and Nyla Saharan also has to deal with speakers of the Niger-Congo languages as well. But again, they might be smaller in terms of number of speakers, but they are still very prominent despite their lower population. They still form powerful groups, very influential groups, because they are so strategically placed in certain areas, and also just because of their lifestyles, allowing them to be flexible in certain ways that maybe some of these other groups may not be. But that's all stuff we'll deal with in the future. But there's going to be a lot of interplay between the various ethno-linguistic groups in the region. Now, we don't have too much to talk about, again, in terms of specific sites or like material cultures, at least not yet. We're getting there for this region. I imagine as time goes on and more archaeological studies are devoted to the area, we're going to get a clearer picture. But unfortunately, it's just one of those regions that has suffered from a lack of scholarly interest, at least until more recent periods. And even now, it's hard to get funding to cover everywhere as much as there are people who may want to, myself included. I would love to have more information about the region. Unfortunately, I'm not an archaeologist. I'm just a historian. And I'm not, you know, linguistics certainly helps. But again, there's a lot of debate, especially around the Nilo-Saharan language family, whereas the Afro-Asiatic and Niger-Congo, much clearer, with one or two exceptions. So, just take that as you will. But yeah, so I think that's kind of a good kind of summation of Lake Chad. You've got two or three ethnic groups kind of in the region, or have maybe two groups and have had one leave within the last 1,000 years or so. We're going to continue talking about the Nilo-Saharan Afro-Asiatic peoples a little bit further east. That'll be for next week, and that might finish up. That might end up being two episodes. I'm not quite sure yet. But we are getting there. No more than two, but I'm going to try and have a longer episode out next week, since it was a little bit of a shorter episode last week and a shorter episode this week, which, again, part of that's due to me traveling for the Memorial Day weekend here in the U.S. I hope the audio turns out okay. I know I had some issues earlier at the very start of the episode. I think there may have also been a cut kind of in the middle. I took a break from recording for a period of time, and I came back, and I've kind of gotten the levels equal out, but I hope it all mixes together well. But I do thank everyone for listening, and I hope you've had a good Memorial Day if you're here in the U.S., and if you are one of my foreign listeners, which there are several, and in fact, many several of you, I appreciate all of your support. Again, it means a lot to me. We may break 1,000 downloads this month. That would be incredible if we get there. I'm not planning on that. Even if I get the same number of downloads this week as I had the last couple, which, again, with the weekend or the long weekend and Memorial Day, I'm not sure that's going to happen. But regardless, just incredible support. Thank you all so, so much. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions or feedback, please let me know. You can reach out to me at war@revpod@gmail.com. You can contact me via direct message on X or Twitter. You can comment on any of my YouTube videos. You can join me for weekly live streams on YouTube. I usually stream something there most of the week, Monday through Thursday at the very least, at the very minimum. And then occasionally I do stuff on the weekends as well. But yeah, thank you all for support. for the support, excuse me. I hope you have a good time, and I hope you look forward to next week. We'll be talking about peoples kind of in the border regions to the southern branches of the Nile, the White and Blue Nile river valleys, and kind of that border region, again, with Ethiopia, the Horn of Africa, and kind of the border regions with what is Egypt. Basically, we'll be talking about the foundations of what will eventually become the Kingdom of Kush, a region that is sometimes also referred to as Nubia as well. And I know last season I did kind of the foundations of Egypt. Well, now we have another proto-state that's beginning to rise in that part of the world next week. So hope you're looking forward to that. Kush is one of the more interesting topics, I feel like, that we're going to be talking about in Africa, probably second only to Egypt, at least for the next season, next couple of seasons. So thank you all. I hope you have a good rest of your day. Goodbye.